This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha.
Yes, history is messy.
In history, we really learn who we are. We understand the context for our own lives. So it is so essential to see ourselves in the past. Mm-hmm.
LGBTQ Pride Month has been observed and celebrated each June since 1970, 1 year after the Stonewall riots in New York City. Since then, Pride celebrations have grown in visibility and popularity across the nation, despite and because of laws and policies that prohibit queer love and even deny LGBTQ people's existence. There have been legislative advancements in queer rights and queer representation in arts and culture. Yet queer history, like that of other marginalized groups, has been misinterpreted or lost to time. The Missouri Historical Society has been working on centering lived experiences and stories of people who are part of such communities. And this weekend, the Gateway to Pride exhibit focused on queer life, past and present, will open to the public. Joining me to talk about this new year-long exhibit is Ian Darnell, Assistant Curator of the LGBTQIA+ Collections at the Missouri Historical Society. Ian, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we also have Sam Moore, the Missouri Historical Society's Managing Director of Public History. Sam, welcome back.
Hi, Elaine. It's great to be here.
And thank you both for being here today. So, Sam, the Gateway to Pride exhibit that's been in the making for years now, a few years ago, a virtual exhibit produced in partnership with the St. Louis LGBT History Project, which was founded by Stephen Brawley, debuted. And it'll soon be part of the physical exhibit at the Missouri History Museum. Sam, what's the story, the backstory to the partnership between Stephen's History Project and the Missouri Historical Society's efforts?
Absolutely. So this has been, like you said, a project that goes back a decade, almost a decade here at the Missouri Historical Society. And thanks to the work of people like Stephen, many decades longer. This is history that is important and is worth sharing. And Stephen, LGBT History Project, have been a huge part in making this exhibit possible. The drive to bring this exhibit to life is really the result of collaboration. And honestly, Ian, having been involved with the LGBT History Project for so long, can probably speak even better to that.
Mm-hmm. Great segue. So you first began working with that St. Louis LGBT History Project, but eventually joined the team at Missouri Historical Society. So how is it that your work with that project started?
Yeah, so I was a young gay man just coming out in college, and I was also a history student and a history nerd with a special curiosity about this place that I live, St. Louis. So at the intersection of those two things, coming out, being gay, and then thinking about St. Louis history, I was really curious about the LGBTQIA+ experience here in the past. I knew that there must have been an amazing story there. So actually, it was just as simple as Googling St. Louis gay history and what should appear but the St. Louis LGBT History Project's incipient blog, which was this was back in 2008, 2007 or so.
Okay.
So I connected with that, and that kind of put me on a journey of research and discovery and public history that eventually led to my involvement with the Gateway to Pride Initiative at the museum and my current role.
Right. So history obviously was something of interest in and of itself, but as far as queer history goes, why was sharing that so important to you, Ian?
Well, because for so many queer people, they don't see themselves in the history that they learn when they're in elementary or high school, even when they're in college, and the historical monuments and sites around the region. In history, we really learn who we are. We understand the context for our own lives. So it is so essential to see ourselves in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that many queer people have a hunger to learn about queer history, and maybe most especially queer history in the places where they live their own lives.
Right. So kind of an erasure by omission.
In many ways, yes.
Mm-hmm. Sam, how about for you? I mean, why is queer history something that you feel needs to be understood more broadly?
I think there's when you walk into the exhibit at the History Museum, there's a big sign that says St. Louis history is LGBTQIA plus history. And the reality is that understanding this history, understanding the lived experiences of queer people in St. Louis for the last 200 plus years helps you understand the St. Louis you live in today. Whether you are a member of the LGBTQIA plus community, whether you're straight, it's important context for this place. It's important context to know. And I think that, it really speaks to this idea that everyone deserves to have their story told, and hearing other people's stories helps you understand your own life better.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as place and space goes, the Gateway to Pride, it takes up space. It's up to 6,000 square feet of the Missouri History Museum, and still only a fraction of the collection of artifacts that tell the story of queer experience in this region will be displayed. Many people, we talked about Stonewall riots in the introduction, they think of that as being the start of queer history, especially during Pride Month. Sam, you've just mentioned, 200 years of history. But Ian, how far back does the Gateway to Pride exhibit take us in St. Louis history, and what sorts of stories are told?
Well, something that historians have found is that pretty much no matter how far back you go anywhere in the world, you can see evidence of people who we would understand today as LGBTQIA+, who we would understand as queer, and that's as true of St. Louis as anywhere else. So in the Gateway to Pride exhibit, we tell the story, for example, of what was called the Masquerading Ordinance. That was a law in the city of St. Louis that made it illegal to wear the clothes of the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm.
And that was passed in 1843, during the early history of the modern city of St. Louis. And we know that that law was enforced regularly through the 19th century. There are incredible and moving stories of people being arrested for violating that ordinance, people who we would probably understand today as transgender, and that mm-hmm. they were living lives that felt right to them as a different gender than the one that they were assigned at birth, and wearing the clothes that match that gender. So we tell some of those amazing stories in the exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
Another amazing story that we tell in the exhibit is story of Claude Hartland.
One of my favorites. One of my favorites. Claude Hartland is this fascinating figure who wrote a book, a memoir, a letter, really, to the medical establishment at the turn of the 20th century. Basically, and we would probably understand Claude to be a gay man, potentially a transgender person today, but essentially writing it's called A Story of a Life, and it tells his story, basically saying to the medical community, we exist in the world, people like me exist in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Claude Hartland takes the particular perspective that he's suffering and that this is a terrible thing for him to have to endure in early 20th century St. Louis. But it's a really powerful piece, and we have clips of that inside the exhibit for you to read through and get this perspective of someone who is clearly grappling with life in early 20th century St. Louis as someone who does not fit that societal mold that would have been expected at the time.
Yeah. Sam and Ian, both of you have talked about the way that we understand things now. And Ian, you've used LGBTQIA+. And as we walk into this exhibit, there are terms, right, that are on display for people before they enter into more of the artifacts that are there, the different components. Why is it that you start with that? Why is that important to really take notice of and to carry as you're going through the exhibit?
It's so that there's a shared basis of understanding, so that visitors to the exhibit are up to speed with the language that we're using throughout the rest of the exhibit. So I think that that's essential for understanding the history that we're telling, because there's a lot of complexity with language whenever we're talking about gender and sexuality. but maybe most especially when we're thinking of gender and sexuality in the past.
Mm-hmm. Now, this exhibit, we're talking about St. Louis, but is it restricted to or limited to St. Louis proper, or is there representation from outside the city itself, Ian?
It's about the entire St. Louis metro region. So we have stories, for example, about the Metro East or Illinois. So in 1961, the state of Illinois became the very first state in the country to legalize sex between members of the same sex. It was very pioneering in that way. And of course, that affected St. Louis's Metro East. So that's, mm-hmm. that's one story we tell. We also tell stories, taking the story up to the near the present day, of annual pride festivals in places like St. Charles and Belleville, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that is unique to queer experiences in different places, so, you know, rural, suburban, urban areas? Ian?
I mean, that's a fascinating question. Really, the idea of the city and what city life means for people is central to LGBTQI plus history. So in the context of St. Louis, like many other big cities in America, we see that the growth of cities really opened up space in a lot of ways for people to live lives that were outside of the norm, to form communities based on shared experience. So a lot of that early history that we're tracing in the 19th and early 20th century demonstrates that.
Mm-hmm. And you were nodding, Sam, as Ian was talking about some of the nuances that do exist and why it's important to recognize the differences based on where in this region people were.
Certainly, and I think what you see throughout LGBTQIA plus history is, in some ways, the city as a place of refuge, right? Or the city as a place where if you are in a rural community, and as a queer person who grew up in a rural community, I can certainly empathize with this, looking to the city as a place where you know there will be a community that you can connect with, or you hope there will be a community that you can connect with. And that simple act, as Ian was talking about earlier, with seeing yourself in history, that simple act of seeing yourself in society is I think critical. And you see that in the Central West End as a gathering place for queer people throughout St. Louis's history.
We need to take a very quick break, but we will be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Sam Moore and Ian Darnell about the new Gateway to Pride exhibit at the Missouri History Museum, and it opens this Saturday. Now, before the break, Sam, we were talking about the Central West End, about the city as a place of refuge. And one of the things that often happens when we have conversations in this region is we talk about city and not city and some of these binaries. Now, when we talk about history, it is typically looked at from what producer Maya Norfleet has called an emotional binary. That is, that it's either joyful or painful. And Gateway to Pride offers sort of a fuller picture or a spectrum of the experiences of queer people in the region, like all over the region. But there are moments that are especially hard to revisit. You know, instances of violence, of illness, you know, of discrimination by peers and from the government too. And so every so often, there are notes near displays that kind of give a heads up But what is coming is going to be difficult, that it may be hard to see or to remember. Sam, why was it important from the institutional side of things to add these disclaimers? I mean, isn't it kind of expected that some history is going to be sad or upsetting?
I think that's a very good question. And I think the answer to that is yes. History is messy, right? History is challenging. History is hard. And to your point earlier, history is also beautiful and joyful. There are a few different points throughout the exhibit where we're talking about, and in this exhibit, we talk about everything from art to religion to politics to violence. And when we're talking about violence in particular, we wanted to just make sure that people knew what they were stepping into and the things they were going to see. This is an exhibit that I think is appropriate for all ages and appropriate for our full community mm-hmm. here in St. Louis. But we also, I think, have a responsibility to say, hey, here's what's in the exhibit. And, you know, the exhibit has been laid out in such a way that if you don't want to dig into some of that history around violence against trans people in the St. Louis region, mm-hmm. That's something you can choose not to visit or kind of take a moment and prepare yourself before you do step into that,
right.
Step into that area and engage with that content.
Mm-hmm. Ian, I want to go back to the time span that is covered by the exhibit. And you had walked Maya, our producer, through the exhibit as it was being constructed. And something that she shared with me after she came back is that even though she has a great deal of knowledge of queer history, she was excited to see how much of queer St. Louis history is included that predates Stonewall and the 1970s. What are a couple of your favorite stories or artifacts in Gateway to Pride that showcases queer life and experience pre-1970s?
I mean, one of the, for me, most exciting things about doing the research for this exhibit were uncovering those sorts of stories, those, in many cases, almost entirely forgotten stories of how queer people managed to find ways to live life on their own terms in the years before Stonewall. So one incredible example, the track shoes of Helen Stevens. So
okay.
Helen Stevens grew up in Fulton, Missouri, in mid-Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Fulton Flash.
The Fulton Flash is what they called her because she was an incredible athlete. She was a very gifted runner, so gifted that she went to the Olympics in Berlin in 1936, which mm-hmm. of course, that was Hitler's Olympics, right?
Right.
But she, while she was at the Olympics in Berlin, she won two gold medals, broke a world record in the 100-meter dash, and gained fame for her incredible athletic talents. But she was also a woman who loved women, secretly, of course, at the time, because it was almost impossible to be an openly queer public figure at that time, especially at that level of global fame. But what's so amazing is that we know that she actually had a girlfriend back home in Missouri.
Okay.
And we, incredibly, letters, love letters that she received from that girlfriend are archived at the State Historical Society of Missouri, and we reproduce some of those letters that she received in the months after the Olympics alongside those track shoes. So it's this, I think, very moving and revealing juxtaposition of this public life
mm-hmm.
as an Olympian, and then this private life as a queer woman in a relationship
mm-hmm.
in a time where that was extraordinarily difficult.
One of the things that Maya also had mentioned was Miss Fanny's ball in the 1950s and drag balls at clubs that raised funds for the Black community. And this sort of leads into something that I think is really important, which is intersectionality. Now, there's a section of the exhibit that talks about the various ways queer people created their own spaces to be around other queer folks, and that there are examples of people seeking further representation with their gender expression or whom they love. So racial identity, religious identity, that's a big thing mm-hmm. here. And one that struck out to me was a brochure that was meant to bring gay Asians together. Now, that stood out to me because sort of thinking about what different cultural attitudes are and how being out can be so, it puts your life in jeopardy. How is it that intersectionality became part of this display? And were there conversations that had been happening even before you decided on what was going to go into this exhibit that made you really prioritize representation across, you know, different categories of identity?
Sure. I think the like we mentioned earlier, the work to bring this particular exhibit to life stretches back a decade, and it goes back many decades before. I think we can see, and we were talking about this a little bit before we came on air, this idea of there is a minority communities within a minority community, right? These stories that are kind of segmented out even within the LGBTQIA plus community as a whole. I think what we really wanted to make sure to do, and Ian can speak even more eloquently to this, is bring Black queer stories to the public's attention in a way that they haven't before. Bring the Black trans experience to the public's attention as it hasn't before. To bring the trans experience period forward in a way in St. Louis history that it hasn't before. And that has been through community advisory groups. It's been through years of making inroads and building trust, frankly, with different communities to be able to have that content on the walls and have those artifacts to share those stories.
Mm-hmm. Are there any examples that you can share, Ian, that sort of illustrates what Sam has been talking about?
Sure. I mean, the Miss Fanny's Ball story is a great one because mm-hmm. it's, in fact, the... I believe one of the, if not the longest running annual traditions in LGBTQI plus St. Louis. So we absolutely had to tell that story. But even beyond that, another good example is the story of Black Pride St. Louis. So that is an annual tradition that began in 1995, originally as the B-Boy Blues Festival.
Mm-hmm.
It was founded by Eris Williams Jr. and then other people associated with the organization Blacks Assisting Blacks Against AIDS, which was an organization that formed to respond to the particular impact that the HIV/AIDS crisis was having on the African American community. But they decided to start an annual festival, and it's become an annual tradition in a way of celebrating the specific experience of Black LGBTQIA plus people.
Mm-hmm.
So in the exhibit, we have a banner from one of those early festivals. And actually, that banner is on loan from the Griot Museum of Black History,
mm-hmm.
another local historical institution that we've cultivated a relationship with. There are LGBTQIA plus people in every race and ethnicity. The queer community reflects the diversity of the wider community. So if we were really going to do justice to this history, we had to be able to share stories that reflected all mm-hmm. of that diversity.
So for those who are not gay or trans, who do not identify as LGBTQIA plus in any way, what is it ultimately that that they should be taking away from this exhibit, Ian?
That's a great question. And I'd say, first of all, in case anyone has any doubts, this exhibit is for everyone, regardless of your sexual orientation or gender identity. And I think people who are not a part of the LGBTQIA plus community will still have a lot to learn from in this exhibit, a lot to enjoy. But I think probably if I had to boil it down to one message, it's that there have always been queer people in St. Louis, or people that we would think of today as queer, and that they're stitched into every other aspect of the city's history. So
mm-hmm.
if you really want to understand St. Louis, you have to understand the struggles, the achievements of LGBTQIA plus people.
Mm-hmm. Note, this is an exhibit that will run for a year, and making sure that you are connecting with community, not only to understand how to display things, but in terms of getting assets, right, artifacts to put into it. Sam, Can people continue to contribute to this collection of queer artifacts?
They certainly can. They certainly can. So this exhibit will be open through June of 2025, but the story doesn't end there. The collecting initiative, the work to preserve and share this history doesn't end there. So they can certainly continue to share stories with us, continue to donate artifacts. This is the first LGBTQIA+ history exhibit at the Missouri History Museum. It certainly won't be the last, though.
And the last question, Ian, there's going to be an opening celebration. Is there anything that people should bring with them?
I would say bring an open heart, an open mind, and plenty of curiosity about this amazing facet of our region's history.
Thank you, each of you, for coming, and good luck with the opening.
Thanks so much.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations, and leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.